So you're a good squatter?
I'm a decent squatter, yeah.
What's your one rep max?
Do you want to... I don't know it exactly in pounds. Kilos. It's 500 pounds.
Oh, it's 500 pounds. Yeah. Okay, that's a lot.
A lot. I like
that's
the
probably
squat.
My combined total with all the three major movements.
All of the movements, yeah. But I've been squatting since I was 13 years old.
And you never had any problems with your back or your knees?
I've had like little injuries, but I've, knock on wood, never had a big injury. So in 2018, so from 2018 to 2020, I had this really bad nagging knee pain, but it wasn't necessarily from squatting, specifically the back squat. It was from just the volume of squatting I was doing in all movements, right? Because I was training for CrossFit. So every single time I was squatting, like, I was re-aggravating this injury. And it wasn't quite an injury. It was just a little tendinopathy. Like, my patella tendon was smoked. I've had that. And then there have been a couple of times, three times that I, so I guess that's a few, where I've popped my back on a back squat, which is just if I drive a lot or I travel a lot and I'm sitting, my hip flexors will get really tight, right? And then when I go to squat, my hip flexors being tight will expose my back a little bit, and I'll just tweak my QL. And I've fallen actually a couple of times because of that. So like I'll be coming up out of the squat, and this is where it happens. Same time or same place every time. I'll be coming up out of that squat and right above parallel. So like I'll make it above parallel, it'll go, and I'll fall forward. But those are the only things that I've ever had.
Yeah, I recently had the same thing. I was in Berlin at the Coaches Congress, mm-hmm. and we drove home. It was like 7-hour drive. And I mean, my back is always like really bad, right? My knees used to be very bad. They're okay now because I don't really squat anymore.
Okay.
So, but my back still is really bad, and I don't know where it's coming from. But I was doing back squats on Monday, and we drove home on Sunday. And I was feeling pretty good. And I just did body weight back squats for 10 or 12 reps. And like in the third set, I was feeling like, oh shit, it doesn't feel right, but it's good enough. I can make a fourth set. I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
And since then, which is like, I don't know, it's like 2.5 months, I have severe back pain, and I need to like make an appointment in the MRI next week. Yeah, I have to do that.
You got
to
go see somebody about that.
I mean, you know, you probably know that, right? So you have pain and you feel like, oh shit, that's bad. And then you work out and it's getting better. And you think like, okay, maybe I don't have to see a doctor. Maybe I can push through, but it's not going away. So
yeah, if it's not going away, you gotta see somebody for it. I have been able to a couple of times feel if something was coming on my back. But twice I felt totally fine. I felt nothing. And then it went. Though I video a lot of my sets when I'm weightlifting just so I can like coach my technique or send them to Amy Everett, who helps me, who coaches my weightlifting. And I can see now when my hip flexors are really tight, I stand up weird. Where like I don't feel like I'm standing up weird, but I can see it in the video that I will hitch around a certain part in the squat, and that's when I know I'm not going to push it.
So I think a big part of this kind of problems is because you talked about volume, right? Mm-hmm. Too much volume. And I think, or I see it in my own training and in my affiliate, that a lot of people, they train with too much volume because they don't really give a shit about the programming in the class. They want to do their own thing in the open gym. And you can blame them. I was the same guy like totally. 10 years ago. So, but programming is a very, very crucial point.
Yeah.
And it's one of the things I want to talk with you about is how to like write a good programming, how to follow a programming. And you just did a keynote on strength training as a base of everything. And I think that's what we should talk about today.
Cool. Yeah. So for those listening, I just gave a keynote up on a big stage. My second time ever being on a stage like that.
How did it feel?
The first day was yesterday I got off the stage and I said to my girlfriend, I was like, I hated that.
Have you been nervous?
Yeah, but which is funny because I speak in front of people all the time, right? Like I'm a coach and I travel the world and have coached in front of all sorts of people whose language I don't speak. I've coached in front of. And so going into this in the weeks leading up, I was starting to get really nervous. And a part of it, I think, is that I was speaking in front of people who are peers to me, right? Who I've looked at their training before their programming or like listen to them speak and to learn, and they were going to be sitting in the audience. So part of that was nerve-wracking, but it was much more nerve-wracking than I expected to speak in front of the people, which is what I was not worried about coming here. So yesterday I got up there, and for those that know me, like, I move around a lot. Like, even sitting here, I move my hands, like, I move around. My feet were glued to where I was on the stage yesterday. And, like, I got through it. I delivered the information in the way that I mostly wanted to. Like, I sounded, I think, coherent, but I was not fully Jake, right? Like, moving around. Today was totally different, like, much more relaxed, moved around a lot, felt really good. Even the audience today was much more open, right? I think that we had dinner last night and people got to know each other. And so there was an air of openness happening, and the audience engaged a lot more today. And I think that the topic that I talked about, which is what we'll talk about here, and that's strength training is the base of training for everything, right? Not, and that's not me saying it's the most important thing, but using it as the base. And I was talking specifically to affiliates. They were really engaged with that presentation, or at least it felt like it. And it felt like I was providing something that was maybe useful for them, more so than the talk yesterday, because the talk yesterday was about elite athletes, which a lot of folks don't work with. And if you think you want to work with them and then decide, I do like working with them. But I think that it's easy to look at it and be like, that's the top of the mountain, and then get to the top of the mountain and be like, well, I don't know that this is.
They're only cooking with water.
Yeah, yeah. But working with the athletes that we have at HWPO is like a huge joy.
So we already know that you're a good athlete when you can squat like 500 pounds. But how did your coaching career start?
Yeah, so I stopped being an athlete because I wasn't that good of an athlete. Technically, my coaching career started when I was 15. Well, I totally shouldn't have
How
been
old
coaching.
Are you now?
I don't know that anybody should let me do that. I'm 26.
I mean, I'm 32.
Yeah, so. I look 45, I know. That's what people like to tell me.
That's the squatting.
Yeah, it's the squatting.
That's why
it's
I look so young, because I don't squat
training.
Anymore.
Exactly, yeah. If you don't cut too heavy and you don't do too much volume, you won't have any gray hair at 26. But I got really into training when I was 12. And then I got really into strength training when I was 13, and I competed in powerlifting, and I'd get my phone taken away at school all the time because I would be reading Elite FTS articles or T-Nation articles in class. I wasn't even doing anything cool like texting girls. I was like just reading about fitness and training and reading about all of these different programming methods and like scientific articles, all of this stuff. If I applied that to my school, I'd have been first in my class. I was doing like the most when it came to reading about training, but I was disinterested in school. And so I started playing football, and I was decently strong as a high schooler, like compared to my peers, because I had just started earlier and I really, really, really wanted it. And my football coach was like, hey, do you want to write our strength program and like coach our strength program? And I was like, yeah, sure. So all the guys would come over to my house, and we would do training, and my basement got too small. And so from there, I reached out to a local CrossFit gym and I said, hey, can we use your facility? And they were like, sure, who's going to coach you? And I was like, well, me. And they were like, well, no, we'll give you two classes a week and we'll do them specific strength and conditioning football classes. This was just via an email. And they said that they would set up these two classes a week and they charge us $26 a month a person. That's it. And our football team got
I mean, how many people showed up? Like 50?
Yeah.
Then it's a good deal, right?
It's totally a good deal, but like they were so gracious with it, so gracious with their time. And that's how I got into CrossFit. And then I started coaching CrossFit when I was 18. But before that, I was teaching people how to back squat and deadlift in my basement.
So now you're working with HWPO.
Yep.
How did that happen?
So when I started training CrossFit and coaching a little bit of it, I was 18 and I decided very early on from the start that I wanted to make regionals. And so that was my goal. That was the main goal. That was everything I trained for. And I made regionals. And during that time I had went to college. So I moved from where I grew up to about 2 hours away and was going to college there. I was coaching at a CrossFit gym called Full Range CrossFit in Rhode Island. And Sammy works there. So Sammy Moniz worked at that gym, we became friends, and then she started bringing Matt around. Matt and I became friends. He was really gracious with me and like helped me with my training.
You could be brothers.
Gave me some advice. We have gotten that a lot. Yeah, people seem to think we look like he's got bigger shoulders and bigger traps than me.
Maybe sure. You have bigger quads.
I don't know. We have compared. We're pretty close.
Did you like measure with a tape?
Yeah. I don't know. We have never.
It's a little
done
bit
that.
Awkward, right?
No, I might break the tape out. Yeah. But I met Matt. We became friends, and he like gave me some mentorship and helped me out a lot in my competing. And
what year was that?
This was in 2016.
So it was right around before he like had his winning streak?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. So I met him right at the beginning of that, and he was, it still is, he was always just a very normal guy who wanted to hang out and like work out, and he took it obviously very seriously, probably more seriously than anybody else. But he, at the end of the day, was like a very normal dude, and we got along and hit it off, and he helped me a lot with my training, and through that we remained friends. And then when he launched HWPO, I reached out and said, hey, I'm going to do the program. And he reached back out and was like, no, why don't you test it instead before I launch? So 3 months before he launched Flagship, the first HWPO program, I tested all of it and gave him way more feedback than he was looking for. I would give him like paragraphs on every single day of training. And from there, he was like, hey, I just wrote the new phase. Can you write some warm-ups for it? And I was like, yeah, totally. And I wrote them really quickly because I wanted to like just got them back to him as soon as I could. And then he's like, well, hey, could you write some workouts for it? And so I wrote a bunch of workouts. And then after two or three times of that, he's like, do you want to just make this a full-time thing? And I was like, yeah, I would love to. And that's how that started.
So you were the first one who's like full-time workout writing for HWPO?
Yeah.
How many people are involved now?
We have around 20 employees now.
That's a lot.
It is a lot. And it's not been that long. We've grown very fast.
I mean, I just saw the pictures of your new headquarters, of your new building.
Yep.
Looks amazing.
Thank you. That building came together very quickly. And so we had gotten the keys.
Did
we
you
had
build them. It? Or
it was an existing building.
Okay.
We renovated the inside. And so we had somebody do that. And then our partners at Surface Co., who are flooring, they came in and laid the floor down. But that was it. Right. And then Concept 2 came in and they built all their machines because they're local in Vermont. Concept 2 is not that far away from us.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. Their headquarters is amazing. And the guys that work there are just super fun people and like really willing to help out. They've known Matt forever. And they came over to the gym and they built all of our equipment, all of our Concept 2 equipment. So we have six of everything. They built it all in a day. And so that was there. And then on Wednesday, April 10th, we got an 18-wheeler from Rogue. A shipment completely full. It took us 2.5 hours to unload it with a forklift.
But that's pretty fast, actually. We had the same thing. So we were at regionals in Germany, mm-hmm. in Berlin, like, I don't know how long it's ago, years ago. And they had this CrossFit booth. And there's a Facebook group of CrossFit owners in Germany. And they wrote in the group, yeah, it doesn't make any sense for us to like ship the regional booth back to the US. So if someone wants it, you can have it, but you have to take it all and you have to pick it up.
Wow.
And no one wanted it. So I have a friend who has like a company who like ships stuff.
Yep.
And ask him how much is it to drive there and just pick it up. He's like $1,000. And I said, okay, just do it.
Yeah.
And I had no expectation. Whatsoever,
what
right?
You're about to get, yeah.
And then this truck came, and it was like full. Like there was like 20 new ab mats and like 5'11" tactical weight vests, and it was crazy. It was like $25,000 or something.
Yeah,
for $1,000, so it was the best deal I ever did. Right?
Yeah, you just had to do a little bit of work to get it. So that's what we got. It was an 18-wheeler full of stuff, and much like you, we opened it up and we went, "How much of it's ours?" And the guy goes, "All of it." We had a forklift, and so
I mean that stuff is probably pretty heavy, right? It's like rigs and dumbbells.
Oh, we had
and
rigs, dumbbells, everything that you could imagine for this gym. We had on this 18-wheeler, and so we spent the entire day unloading and putting it into the gym, and just placing it where it was going to go was like the whole day. So we spent all of Wednesday, April 10th. I remember this because it was a big project.
What year was it?
This is last year,
2023.
So this was 2023, yeah.
It's only 1 year. Not even, it's like 9 months.
Yeah. We haven't even been in the space for a full year. That was day one. Day two, we came in and we spent 14 hours. I am not exaggerating. 14 hours unboxing equipment and breaking down the boxes. That was it. We didn't build equipment that day. We just unboxed it.
How many people worked there full time at the time?
So doing that on Boxing Day, there was four people there. So four of us, 14 hours. and we got it done. And then that was the day after, right? So that was the 11th. Our grand opening was on the 15th. And so we put this gym together in just less than a week. And we put the rig up. And I remember we put this rig up. It was custom. And we're looking at the rig and we're going, man, like, this is really weird that Rogue would do that. Everything's a quarter inch off. And we're sitting there, we're like, Rogue, they wouldn't do that. Rogue doesn't make mistakes. And if they say they're going to do it, they do it. Like, they're an incredible company. And so we're like, we messed something up. But I had to go home that weekend for Father's Day, for my dad's birthday, actually. So I went home and Matt called me. He goes, hey, you're never going to guess what we did. And I was like, what? He goes, we built the rig the wrong way. And this rig is, like, huge. This is a massive rig. It takes up the whole space. I was like, what do you mean? Every post was 90 degrees the wrong way. And so we had built this whole rig, spent the whole day building this rig, like, really put it together, and we're proud of it.
But you didn't, like, screw it in the ground, right?
No.
Okay.
We didn't screw it in the ground, thank God. And so we had to go through, they had to go through, I wasn't there for this process, they had to go through and turn every single post 90 degrees while the rig was already standing after we had built it.
But I mean, it could have been much worse.
Yeah. It could have been in the ground.
Imagine you had to disassemble everything. That's what happened to us, actually.
Oh, no.
So we had a rig and we built it. When we moved, we, like, disassembled everything. We wanted to put it back up and the same shit happened. It's like when you don't really, like, be careful what you're doing and you fuck it up. Like,
you're just trying to get it done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're tired, you're stressed, and then you just want to get the work done, and then something like that happens.
Sammy's dad, he goes to the gym that I coached at in Rhode Island, Full Range, and he had given me a mattress one day, right? And I went over to his house, I strapped it to the truck, and I was about to drive away, and he goes, hey, you didn't strap it down well enough. And I was like, yeah, but it'll be fine. He goes, listen to me, you do it right, or you do it again. And I was probably like 19 at the time, and so that has stuck with me forever. And he helped us build the rig. And he goes, man, we do it right or we do it again. And it was a good lesson in that, again, to be reminded of that you do it right or you have to do it again.
So I imagine with the gym, it's like a big testing ground for all the workouts, right?
Yep.
What did you do before you had the gym?
Matt's basement. Yeah, it was 1,000 square feet and, like, it worked really well. And we had a ton of fun in there. And towards the end, when we had decided we were going to build a building or get the building, we were like, man, when we have the building, it's going to be so nice. When we have the build, and now we're like, remember when we were in the basement?
Yeah, I absolutely know what you mean. Yeah. I mean, we moved with the CrossFit box like 6 years ago, and we had a very, very small place.
Right? Yep.
150 square meters probably, ground space. And I thought, this is too small. We have to move.
Yeah.
But now I look back, and I feel like, it was cool the way it was, right? Now you have this big space.
You're kind of all, like, in this shared suffering of sorts where you're like, it's a small space. We've got to figure it out. Like, you're in it together very much. Yeah, and that big space is just a little bit different. But I'm really glad we have the space. It's cool.
So how did the bigger building affect the way you were doing your programming? Did something change or was it just a new facility? And
When we program for athletes that are in town, certainly it changed. Like, we can do muscle-ups on whatever day we want. We used to have, there was a gym local to us called 802 CrossFit, and they let us come over whenever we wanted.
Muscle-up Monday.
Yeah, so it was Saturday and Sunday. It was, if we did muscle-ups, wall balls, rope climbs, shuttle runs, handstand walks, or anything where you had to, like, cover distance, we were doing it on Saturday or Sunday, no matter what. Now we can do whatever day we want. And that's the main way that it's changed programming. We can also have people do workouts against each other. We can set things up more like, if we want to test a regional style workout, right, or semifinals, we can set things up where you move down the floor. So we have more of that. But it really hasn't changed how we program at all. Though it is nice because now, like, when we were working out of Matt's house, we wouldn't always work at Matt's house. So if I'm writing something and I wanted to test how long like 15 box jumpovers are, I would have to wait till the next time I was at Matt's house to test it. Now I can just walk out of my office into the gym, test it, come back in. Or we program a lot of things that like don't have an actual name for our athletes, whether it's an accessory or a warm up. And so I will go into the gym, film something, walk right back into my office, send it off. And that has been very nice.
So let's talk about programming.
Yeah.
I mean, in the keynote, you talked about strength training being the base. So when you with HWPO approach programming, what are your like your main pillars of programming?
Totally. So the keynote, I was asserting essentially that if you're running an affiliate, it makes sense to have strength be the base of your programming because it's the furthest away from what we do in our everyday life. We can get activity in our everyday life by accident most of the time.
By walking. My Whoop always tells me I'm doing like a walk.
Right.
My heart rate goes up.
Right. Well, our heart rate's going to go up going up the stairs, walking around. And like the most that we're ever going to act against an external load in our day-to-day life is maybe if we're fighting with our partner and they're really pissing us off and that feels like an external load. But physically actually going against something that is moving back at you, the only time we're going to do that is with a backpack if we're picking it up or like if we're picking a box up off the floor or groceries or going up the stairs. And the stimulus from that is not enough to make us stronger, right? Unless you work a manual labor job. Different story. And so my point was, if you run an affiliate, it makes sense to give people strength as frequently as possible. But that doesn't mean that it's the most important thing or the only thing, right? I think a lot of people hear that and they go, yeah, but strength is not the most important. And that's not my point. My point is strength is harder to get out in the world. And so we ought to prioritize it to some degree for the people who are coming into our gyms. And the way that we do that is to write a program that reflects that the base of that program is strength. And that can be that we are acting against something external more days than we're not, right? So we're lifting a dumbbell, a barbell, a sandbag, something more days that that person comes to the gym than they aren't touching anything. And so at our gym, and a lot of gyms, it's 2.5 days a week is how often people typically will show up, right? Changes from gym to gym. You obviously have the guy who shows up every single day, but for the most part, you've got 2.5 touches on that person a week. And if one of those touches or two of those touches, they're not doing any sort of strength training, I think that we're going to have, they're going to see progress over time, but they're going to have to commit for a lot longer, right? So if we know we only have that person for 3 months, because that's like a typical member, right? Well, then we probably aren't going to create that much change in their life from a physical perspective. Maybe we give them the habit of working out and they stick to it once they go somewhere else or they leave us, which is cool. But as far as physical change, we can drive the most by allowing them to touch strength training very frequently. And in the talk, I talked about how strength training doesn't have to look like heavy fives in the back squat. It can be goblet squats with a tempo and the weight's not that heavy, right? But they're focusing on the act of getting stronger. And that's going to drive adaptation in other things as well, right? So we've seen the weak athlete who comes into the gym and they can't go hard enough on the assault bike or the echo bike to really make a difference for them, right? Because they're so weak. And they will probably get strong enough at some point by just doing echo bike to make themselves go hard enough. But we can make that go faster if we just get them stronger. And so that strength will feed our output in cardio movements, right? You get a really strong guy on a rower or girl on a rower, they're going to be able to pull really hard and make themselves tired. And if they can do that, they're going to get a better stimulus out of that conditioning. And so if we can get people strong, they're going to get better stimulus out of conditioning. They're going to be able to get conditioned, and that's going to make them be able to do more strength work because they'll have higher capacity, and both feed on one another. And I don't think one is more important than the other. But I think the base, for me, needs to be in strength.
Yeah, I think that's the beauty of CrossFit, right? You do one movement and you get better at it, and like you have this crossover effect to other movements. When you just talked about the ergs and you get stronger and you get better on a rower, for example. Like, I mean, I've been doing strength training for years before I hurt my back and my knees, and then I didn't really like do the heavy strength training, but I still did strength training. And when I did cardio for periods of time and didn't really touch a heavy weight, and I had problems like with the rowing machine to hold 1,000 calories an hour before I could do that like with a with ease, right?
Yep.
And that's so interesting to see and for people to understand that there is this layover effect between the strength and the cardio training.
There is. And like you said, that you weren't able to train for a little bit and you started having some problems on the rower. And if you were just rowing and you were doing no other like loaded activity, your back would probably get a little funky because you're never moving through the positions and challenging them. And we see that a lot with people who have back pain. Like my parents are on the older side. I'm sorry, Mom. My dad doesn't care, but I'm sorry, Mom. And she has a little bit of back pain now, and she knows when she doesn't work out, her back pain's actually worse, right? Because it's just sitting and getting tighter and like not moving. And when she does some squats, and my mom is grabbing a 5-pound dumbbell and doing goblet squats, right? And they're not even perfect goblet squats, but she's moving through that position with the intention of doing it really well. Her back pain is less. She has less of it.
When you talk about programming for an affiliate, usually we have this 60-minute class time. Mm-hmm. And from my perspective as a coach, now we at the moment we're using the Comtrain programming.
Yep.
Because I wanted to test it out before we used affiliate programming, the CAP programming. And so typical CrossFit workout is cardio and strength and sometimes both, but only like 1 in 2 weeks.
Yep.
With the Comtrain now, we have like 2 or 3 days a week where we have this strength training plus cardio.
Yeah.
How's your approach?
It's really specific to population, right? So ideally, I like programming and knowing the population that I'm programming for. And obviously,
let's talk about just a regular gym where you have like a little bit of older people, some younger people.
Yeah,
some...
so if you have a regular gym and there is a mixed population and you have people who really like to go for it and then you have people who are just there for their hour of fitness, you can definitely cater to everybody to some degree, right? You're not going to cater to one person to like the most that you could, but you can cater to everybody. And the way that I would do that is on Thursdays, so day 4, I presented a 9-day work week in the talk that I just gave. But on day 4, I typically have something that is just cardio, right? And I mean cardio, not even a Metcon necessarily. It's like rowing and box jumps and maybe some burpees, but it's longer, it's repeats. And it's low stress, higher volume, and that volume is at a more moderate intensity. And then I have 1 day a week on Saturdays where that's a partner workout, right? And these aren't necessarily all my ideas. I worked at a gym for a long time where Adam was the guy who wrote the programming, and him and his wife owned it. And I learned a lot of this from him because it worked really, really well. And so there's 2 days a week where we did not touch any strength training at all, right? Maybe on the cardio day you did some like band pull-aparts and core work. But then there was 4 days of the week where we did stuff that was strength-oriented. And some of those sessions were specifically back squat for everybody. Some of those sessions were weightlifting. And for half the class, they would do the weightlifting. And then for the other half of the class, they would do, say, RDLs and planks. And they at least got the touch 4 days a week of strength. And so that is my mix, is 4 days a week of touching something that's strength-oriented or accessory-oriented. And then 2 days a week where you don't touch it at all. But even within those strength days, some are going to be more on the strength side and some are going to be more on the Metcon side.
So within one class, you make like this distinction between, okay, you do the weightlifting part and you're a beginner, you're probably not so good at weightlifting, you do something else?
Yeah, and it's not always ability level that we distinguish by. We allow people to self-select, right? So if I have somebody come in and they're a professor and they have a really busy day and they like, weightlifting is not their thing. They don't care about it, right? But they want to get fit. And we are a good option for them to get fit, we being the entire CrossFit community. They don't have to do a snatch, in my opinion. I don't think they do. And so there's a fitness option for them to be able to go in to the class, get a stimulus that's going to be better than them trying to learn the snatch and us trying to force them to learn the snatch, because they're not going to get, they're going to get some technical gain, right? But if they're just snatching a PVC pipe for 20 minutes while other people are snatching, those people are lifting some actual load and they're going to get some adaptation. And that guy is going to learn how to snatch with a PVC pipe. And so he'll have some technical gain, but he's not going to get any stimulus from that. And he may not want it at all. And so it's not always based on performance. Sometimes people just they don't want to weightlift, which I think is very much okay.
Yeah, that's very interesting because I think usually when you follow a certain program, it's like written in stone. You have to do this. And I mean, even if I talk for myself, right? When there's a 5x5 back squat written on the whiteboard, I know I can do 5 reps of back squat,
yep.
But the weight which I would use, because I know my back, it wouldn't have any adaptation whatsoever, right? I did like body weight. I don't need to do 5x5 body weight back squat, but I don't want to go heavier, right? And so what I can do, if I know if this workout pops up in advance, I can skip this class. But when I have an option to do something else, which is probably 5 sets of 20 goblet squats with 1 minute plank in between, I don't know. That makes it completely different, right? Now I can choose the stimulus. Maybe like hypertrophy training is more my kind of training.
Yeah.
And then I have something to choose from.
And in providing you that, like, you're probably going to stay longer. Right, I think that it could be a dangerous game to play to always tell members you can do whatever you want because
That didn't really work.
It doesn't work, nope. Right? Like you have more often than not, people pose with the question of, do you want to do this really hard shit over here or this kind of easier shit? They're going to pick the easier stuff, right? It's just the nature of people, and it takes a special, relatively special person to always choose the harder, or more often than not, choose the harder one. And so we've got to tell people to do something. And when I'm making the distinction between a snatch and then a session that is maybe RDLs and some strict press, the RDL and strict press session is probably often, it's harder, right? Like they're doing bodybuilding stuff. It's going to burn a little bit more. Technically, the snatch is more difficult. But from a physical perspective, that bodybuilding-esque session is going to be the more challenging one.
Do you have these options on every day of the week, or are there special days where you have these two options and like the cardio days the same for everybody, the team workout is the same for everybody?
So it'll go one direction, not the other. There will never be a day where it's just weightlifting, right? If there's weightlifting on a day, there's an option that doesn't include weightlifting, but there may be a day that is just that fitness style where it's more bodybuilding-esque and no weightlifting option, and that's for everyone.
Do you think this creates a culture problem inside the walls of a gym when you have like the members choose between two workouts? Did you ever get feedback on that?
Yeah, if you let it, right? I think that there's this, the culture is tough to control, right? But it's set from the top. So if you have a bunch of coaches who are all bought into the idea that there should be two tracks and they speak about it in the way that is encouraging, right? And says, hey, if you're choosing, like if I got up in front of the class and I said, all right, here's the weightlifting option for the people who are really skilled, really fit, really good, and they're super talented, you guys crush it. And here's the other option for you people that can't do it. That's a much different feeling than if I get up there and say, hey guys, today you'll notice that we have this option and this option. If you're somebody who really enjoys weightlifting, maybe it's a skill that you want to work towards, this is your option. If you're somebody who's not interested in building that skill, and you want to do this over here, these are the benefits that you're going to get from this. These are benefits that you're going to get from this. Neither are worse. This is based on personal preference. Like, that's a much different feel that your members get. So if all your coaches speak that way, there's no culture problem because everybody's into it, right? And like, a lot of times we'll try to do the same Metcon. And so people will get blended, right? And we'll allow maybe some scale up in that Metcon. Say there's ring rows, you could do butterfly pull-ups. But that also brings people together. But I think that the act of working out together is enough to bring people together, even if it's not the same stuff. And being together is being together, and that is going to cultivate some member community no matter what, especially if your coaches are speaking that way, right? But if you have a coach who gets up there and everybody knows that Sandra at the 4:30 class doesn't like the way that we program, like, you're going to get the people go to the 4:30 class and they're not going to dig the programming. But if everybody's on the same page, you're going to get the members to buy in.
So I was wondering, how do you create a lesson plan for a class where you have two different options? Because let's say you have the weightlifting option and you have something else. So usually when you have weightlifting, you need a weightlifting specific warm-up to like prep the body. But if you have like shoulder press and Romanian deadlifts, I mean, you can just like get to the bar, do some reps with lightweight and stuff like that?
So the way that we go about that, and it's a great question, is like, for doing different things, the warm-up typically will look different. I warm up for the weightlifting. And so I will address the class and say, hey, today there's snatches on the menu for performance. If you're not into snatching, this is a good opportunity to like get technical and learn something new. Grab a PVC pipe. And then for those of you that are snatching or are familiar, go grab a barbell. And we'll do a snatch warm-up for everyone. And so the people who aren't snatching, well, you're still using your shoulders. You're still doing RDLs. You're still bending over. You're still squatting, right? You're still doing all these things that I would do for you anyways. You're just in a snatch grip. And it happens to be with a PVC pipe. And the other people are with a barbell, right? But we're all getting the same stimulus. And if going overhead and squatting below parallel don't warm you up to go overhead and squat below parallel, we've got bigger issues. And so I do the same warm-up for everyone. And then when we go in, they can break away. And typically when we program something that's diverging like that, if we're cleaning, well, we're doing RDLs and planks on the other side. From a pattern perspective, those aren't that different. Like over here, we're hinging and we're passing through the bottom of the squat and we're bracing through the core. And over here, we're going to hinge. We're not going to pass through the bottom of the squat, although maybe I'll put goblet squats in there. And we're going to brace through the core. And so I'm talking about the same principles, but the methods are different. And we try to develop coaches, or you would try to, if you run this format, develop your coaches to be able to speak that way versus seeing a clean is only a clean.
So usually when women start working out at the CrossFit box, they are more likely to dislike weightlifting because usually in the training they have never touched a barbell and they're more used to like this like gym style training or group class training without weights. But then they, over the time, they get used to it, they like it. But you do the programming like this for a very long time. Do you see that there is a difference between the people who choose like the weightlifting or the other part inside a class? Is it more like the men, they want to do the weightlifting part, and the women, they choose like to do the accessory stuff? Or
You can see the distribution for sure. It's probably more male female on that side of things. I think that like typically you get a bunch of guys in a room and they kind of want to go for it and compete, and going to weightlifting is a good way to go for it and compete. And like you said, as men, we're typically exposed to weightlifting more. So that's something we're familiar competing in anyways. Even if you just grew up playing sports, right? You like probably saw it, did a little bit of it. But I find that the women that learn weightlifting learn it way faster than the men.
Looks better.
It looks so much better, right? And they like, with the men, you're like, dude, David, pull some weight off the bar. What are you doing? And with the women, you're like, hey, you can put a little weight on. Like, you're moving really, really well. That's typically what I find. But as far as the differences between the performance and fitness, I actually see the difference with age more. So, like, the performance...
So, the younger people, they tend to do the more of the weightlifting stuff, and the older people, they...
Yeah.
Okay.
And someone's going to say this. So, I like weightlifting, but I am not one of the people who think that everybody needs to weightlift or overhead squat. Especially if your goal is just to be fit.
Yeah, and I think that's like one of the big misconceptions, right? That when you start with CrossFit, that you have to do all this like CrossFit-ish kind of movements. You have to do handstand push-ups and overhead squats and squat snatches. Whereas CrossFit as a methodology is, I mean, it doesn't really tell you what to do. It's just like, this is good for you, and the adaptation or the application can look different across different age groups.
Everything. And I've heard people make the argument that, well, learning the snatch is like one of the 10 general physical skills, is like coordination, balance, and it teaches all of those things. And like, I would argue that if we can't do that with a different movement, then maybe we need to open up our coaching repertoire a little bit.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's actually one of those things. I mean, I'm exposed pretty regularly to level ones and level twos because I translate for CrossFit, and then I get a lot of exposure. And especially when you go to the level two seminars, you see all these coaches who've been coaching for years, and then they like they're in the spotlight and they should teach an air squat, and they're stumbling over their words and they don't know what to do. And I think that's like coaching the basics, understanding the foundation of movements. That's one thing which is so important, and a lot of coaches, they skip it. And when you like stick to the basics and always repeat the basics, you get a better coach over time.
Yeah, I mean, you make a great point. Like, one, I think the level one and level two are amazing for people. You make a really good point on the coach who can't coach an air squat. Like, if you brought me a coach to the gym and I was running a gym and you said, this guy or this girl, they can coach the air squat and the shirk press and everything better than anyone I've ever met, but they have no idea how to coach weightlifting, I'd be like, awesome, cool, put them on, like, bring them in. I can teach them how to coach weightlifting. Where if you took somebody who was a fantastic weightlifting coach, this would be hard to find, because if you're a fantastic weightlifting coach, you could probably teach the other things. But just for the sake of this example, and you brought them and they couldn't teach anything else but weightlifting, I don't really want them coaching my CrossFit class, right? You want that person who can really do the basics well, because most people need the basics.
It always comes down to the basics.
It does.
Yeah. And then again, it comes back to the strength training, which is the base of everything. I mean, I would put mobility in this equation as well, because I mean, strength and mobility is probably the two most things which you need to have in order to, if you get older, right?
Yep.
You're losing a lot of strength, a lot of muscle, and a lot of mobility, and those two things, they keep you active and let you live longer. And when you address those basics like 2.5-3 times a week,
yeah,
I mean, we're living in this very, very little bubble, right?
Yep.
We're CrossFitters, and when we look around, we here at the Coaches Congress, you only see fit people, right?
Yeah.
But when you go out in the real world, wow, it's a completely different
thing. It's interesting, and different places are different. I think mobility is an interesting point, because mobility is really, if you're doing a lot of mobility, you're probably fixing something, but we can squat. I'm going to sound like such a paleo guy for a moment, but we're born able to squat, right? Like, we can do it, and we can do it really, really well. And the only time that we can't do it is when we stop doing it. Like, the only person that you've seen who cannot, there are examples I know out there that this is not true for, but 99% of people who can't get in the bottom of the squat at some point were able to get in the bottom of the squat, and they stopped doing it, right? They stopped getting up off the floor. They stopped getting in that squat. And so, but going back to strength, if you always train that movement with full range of motion, you're probably never going to need a big dose of mobility work, because you're passing through the positions and you've maintained that position. It's much harder to regain a position.
I mean, in the end, it's like triaging things, right? When you do an air squat with not proper form,
yep,
it's not going to kill you, right?
No.
You can just practice, practice, practice. When it looks better, you grab a bar and you do some back squat, front squat, yep, whatever. But a lot of people, they're very afraid if their form doesn't look good.
Yep.
And then they don't progress, because they're so like focused on getting like the perfect movement. The same with speed of movement, right?
Totally, yeah. I mean, I think that like it's technique, balance, speed, right? Like, if you have the three, you're good. And yeah, I find people who are afraid to do a movement wrong. But like, we do wrong movements all the time. Like, everyone who picks up their backpack does not set their back right and hinge over to pick it up. Like, you bend over half to the side and you scoop your backpack up and you throw it on your shoulder. And like, that's probably more stressful than an air squat with improper technique. And so if picking up your backpack every day doesn't hurt you, like, your improper air squat's not going to hurt you. You can train it and make it better. And I think we were also built to move in ways that are not right here or right here or whatever, right? Like, we can be fluid and like our back can be rounded sometimes. And we can be half one bent over and loaded on one side and not the other. And that's okay. We're not going to get hurt. And teaching people that, I think, is fun, because when they realize it, I'm like, just do your bad air squat. Like, and tell me if you feel bad. No, I feel fine. And that opens the door for them to like try some stuff and progress.
People move more.
Yeah, move more. I was in Mexico and Colombia in December, and I was coaching with Josh, who works for HWPO as well. We're roommates, and we've gotten to coach a lot all over the world. And we were about three classes in, and we leaned over to one another, and I was like, are these people moving really well? And he was like, yeah, like inordinately well compared to our normal populations that we work with. And so we started like talking, and people, the folks that we were engaging with, were just way more active, like active in their life, right? They walked more places. They like got up off the ground more frequently. Like, everything was just a little bit more active, and they in general moved way better than most Americans that we see.
Yeah, I think that's a big problem, right? When you go to the gym, it's like 1 hour of 24. But when you move like day in and day out, it gives you a very unfair advantage.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, if you move all the time. Like my dad is 77 now, and he has been a roofer, right, a carpenter for his whole life. And now, just now, he's starting to get a little bit immobile, and it's because his knees are really bad. But he can still bench 165. Like, he can still do all these things because he never stopped moving. My mom's the same way. She's 67. She does HWPO sweat every single day, and she can access every position that exists.
That's so cool. And that's actually, in the end, that's what it's for, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not for, like, look. I mean, it's for looking good now, of course.
I mean, we'd be lying if it was not for looking good now. But I think as you get older, that's what it becomes.
I mean, it's if I could choose now to look good now or feel good when I'm 67 or 77, I would know what to choose, right?
Totally.
It's like spending money now or saving for later.
Sometimes it's easier to spend money now.
Yeah, but the problem is, like, most of the people, they're spending now, right?
Yeah.
And they don't save. So they hope something happens.
Some miracle's going to happen, yeah.
It's not going to happen, right?
No.
So much fun talking to you.
Thank you for having me on.
Unfortunately, I have a plane to catch, so...
You should catch that plane.
Yeah, I mean, I want to be stuck in Stockholm, so...
Yeah.
My dog,
it's not a bad place
my
to
dog
be stuck.
Is waiting for me at home, so...
Okay, well, yeah. You got to go.
Good excuse, right? But it was so much fun, and I hope we talk to each other soon.
Yeah, thank you.